Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
It's me.
Hello, it's me.
Hello again.
Hello.
This is
the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
And away we go. If you want to blame it on the rain, or you want to blame it on Godzilla, the Blob, the Son of the Blob, or El Nino, or if you want to blame it on the big-time weather guy, guess what? He's sitting right in front of me. ABC 7 weather anchor Spencer Christian is joining me.
Oh, yeah, and big time.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you, Spencer, for coming in.
Oh, thanks for inviting me. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, absolutely. You know, obviously we want to talk about El Nino right off the bat here. I mean, it looks like we're having this week our first El Nino-driven storm of the week. Yep. What are your early observations?
Well, my early observation, I have lots of observations, but my first one is that the pattern we're in right now, this rain almost every other day, is probably going to stick around for a while. This is sort of your typical El Nino pattern, where you get frequent light to moderate rainfall and then an occasional burst of heavy rain.
Right.
And that's what we've had so far in the past week, and in the next 2 weeks, as we look ahead at the computer models, it looks like more of the same.
John Lobertini joining us from the KGO Newsroom.
Hi, Spencer.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Good. Well, I covered the last big El Nino in 97, 98, and that was the year that we had the March miracle. It hadn't rained a whole lot, and then we had rained like 29 out of 31 days, and it was just a gully washer. But these storms, as you just noted, have been spaced out, and in terms of water storage, that's ideal, isn't it?
It is ideal because, you know, first of all, we're in this four-year drought, so if we were to get these torrential, frequent, heavy rains that you described from the last El Nino, we would have devastating flooding and mudsliding and, you know, all that sort of thing, nastiness. But so this is ideal for relieving the drought and for, you know, helping us to not have to deal with all that devastation that comes with the flooding and mudsliding.
Yeah. But how do we know that's not going to happen?
Well, we don't know.
Southern California, we're already seeing some crazy things going on in Los Angeles.
Southern California is just getting blasted with these storms. Yeah, and they're coming with sudden fury. You know, they've triggered tornadoes down there and funnel clouds and all kinds of wild and wacky things, which I hope we won't get. But there's no way of knowing. We can only reliably look ahead, forecasting weather about 2 weeks, and our models right now indicate that the pattern we're in right now with, you know, moderate rain or light rain every other day will continue for a couple of weeks. If we get really lucky, it'll stay this way through the whole winter season into March.
Yeah, that would be ideal.
And a couple of years like this, or maybe three, could just erase the drought.
Now, I know that state water officials have said that, you know, we need 200% of normal rain to pretty much break the drought.
Yeah.
That's doable, but it's all about how it comes down, how we get that moisture, isn't it?
That is correct. And it's also about snowpack. You know, that's just as important as the rainfall. In a typical El Nino season, as you probably know, because you covered the last big one, you get milder weather, milder air, milder temperatures than we would normally get in the winter. Now, that doesn't bode well for snow in the Sierra. That means slushy snow, melting snow, a lot of rainfall. But there should be lots of snow in the higher elevations. And if we get that good snowpack, along with, you know, the kind of rainfall pattern you talked about, that ideal one where we just get light to moderate rains for a few months. Yeah, if we get up to about 200% of average, I don't know if we'll get that this season. But we could end up 150, 160% of average in rainfall. And if we get the same thing with snowpack, we're on our way to ending the drought.
And it does seem like it's snowing constantly in the Sierra.
And it's cold up there, too, which
it has been cold, colder than it would typically be in an El Nino-driven winter. Yeah.
And that bodes well for keeping the snow, doesn't it?
It does.
I mean, for developing that snowpack?
It absolutely does. It bodes. In fact, the latest snowpack report we got was, I guess, last week. And we were at something like 120% of average.
Right.
And it's early in the season. Now, of course, that could change, but if we continue to get the kind of snow we've been getting the last few weeks, through the winter season, we could end up at 200% of average snowpack, which would be great.
Now, I'm not the brainiac here, but I do know this much, that California doesn't have the ability to store all of the water it needs. So the snowpack is a big deal because if it snows, it freezes, it stays up there, and then it melts gradually and it comes down. And, of course, you get the Great Falls in Yosemite. But that's, you know, the water trickles down what? Well into May, June, July?
Yeah, well into June and sometimes into July. Yeah, May, June, July is about... May is still flowing pretty well, usually, in a winter, I mean, in a season where we've had a good winter snowpack.
Well, where it's really important is probably Central California in the valley, I mean, where it's bone dry. And, and well, of course, it has been all over the state in this region.
Yeah, it has been.
I mean, how is this factoring in for them?
Well, so far...
Is it looking optimistic?
I haven't checked. I can't give you precise numbers, but so far the reports we get are that the water levels are well above average for this time of the year. That's very encouraging, but I don't really know. I haven't paid close attention to what they are like in the Central Valley, which, as you point out, is one of the driest areas of the state.
What about the two primary reservoirs in California are Shasta and Oroville, and that's more to the north.
Yeah.
The rain is falling pretty heavily up there, isn't it?
It has been heavier there than down here, which you would normally expect. So it's raining right now in places like Eureka and Crescent City,
right.
And then farther inland as well. The heaviest rain, in fact, is in the higher elevations farther inland.
Right.
So northernmost part of the state is doing very well so far.
You know, what's interesting is when it doesn't snow or rain down here, you know, people are like, oh, it's not raining. What are we going to do about this drought? But as we see here in the Bay Area, there's a lot of rain in the North Bay, and that is true as you go northward. And again, the two primary reservoirs in California are Shasta and Oroville. So as long as it rains up there and as long as there's some snow in that northern and central Sierra, I'm not the expert here, but, you know, you cover this stuff for years, you learn a few.
Well, I heard some conversation today that, you know, let's not forget about the big D word, drought. It's not going away.
No, it's not.
And they're ready to impose even stiffer fines on the 1% who are big water wasters. $500 for every, I don't know how many gallons, 750 gallons, whatever it is, it's something crazy.
Yeah.
But, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, we've had, 4 years of drought? So... Although we want the drought to go away, we wouldn't want the kind of weather that would make it go away in one season, because that would just be devastating. That much rain would cause, you know, catastrophic flooding and mudslide. But what we want is a pattern like the one we have right now, which appears to be in place for a while. There's no indication yet that this rainy pattern is going to just end suddenly, and we're going to fall behind on rainfall totals again. So if this pattern stays with us through this season and we get another season like this, we'll be well on our way to getting out of the drought. But these water restrictions are not going to be lifted for a while until, you know, there is some certainty that the drought is winding down.
Because there's already this false sense, I can sense it, you know, just by talking to people. Oh, well, we're getting our rain. This is cool.
Yeah.
It's nice to turn the sprinklers off at home.
You're right.
For sure. Yeah.
Might have been off for a while.
Right, yes. Turn them off.
Yeah, that could be a costly observation, couldn't it?
For sure. Let's take a break and we'll be back. And we have ABC weather anchor Spencer Christian joining us. And if you have any questions or comments about the drought, 808-0810 is the number to the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
Bring a
Castro
tonight.
That's right. Oh, good evening, and thank you for joining me. And in the studio with me, we have ABC weather anchor Spencer Christian. It might be raining, man, but hallelujah, it's raining something, and that's a good thing. Hallelujah.
You know, Spencer, it seems like every other week we get some new satellite image that shows all of this warm water out in the South Pacific. I mean, the pictures are spectacular, but can you read anything into that?
Yeah, it looks like Godzilla.
It's we've been calling it Stormzilla, and it's got all kinds of funny names. Now, are we talking specifically about El Nino, which is that warming of the equatorial waters?
Yeah,
because there was a warm blob up north, you know, earlier in the season that was not really technically affiliated, associated with El Nino.
Right. But that was weird. It was south of Alaska, right?
Yeah, south of the Gulf of Alaska.
Okay.
Right.
And there was a meeting of these El Nino storms, and you weren't invited. <in this. laughs>
That one. This one got left out. So that one was referred to as the warm blob, and it was certainly unusual occurrence. But as you know, with El Nino, you get this unusually warm body of surface water in the equatorial Pacific, and the temperatures can be, you know, 1.5 to 2.5 or even 3 degrees Fahrenheit above the average. And then that area of that warm body just spreads and elongates, and as it does so, it develops into what we call El Nino. And it has a significant effect on weather patterns, not only here in the winter, but across the entire southern tier of states and then up into up along the Atlantic seaboard. What it typically means in the winter is that Southern California, more than Central California, gets a higher than average rainfall totals, a milder than average winter, and that there is also a higher than average rainfall pattern across the entire southern U.S. when El Nino occurs. This year, we've got one of the three strongest El Ninos ever observed, and the effect is going to be felt more significantly farther north than it usually is. Does that make sense?
Well, one of the interesting...
I followed it just fine.
Okay. Right. I think one of the interesting things about the El Nino happening is, you know, the climate change in last year was the warmest on record. Yeah. And now the rest of the country is thinking, oh, well, climate change, maybe it's happening because it's warm and they don't understand why they're not getting all the snow that they're supposed to.
Right.
But, I mean, it's either feast or famine, right?
Yeah. It seems that way, yeah. Well, yeah, but the El Nino events have occurred, you know, way back in the past, since before we started recognizing climate change, certainly recognizing human contribution to climate change. But this El Nino may very well be as intense as it is, partly because of the warming of the planet.
Okay, are a climate changer.
Oh, well, yeah, sure. There's no denying the science, except in the United States. Around the rest of the world, 99% of all scientists in all fields, but certainly in atmospheric science, not only say that we are in a period of global warming, but that it has been influenced by human behavior. Here in the United States, there is a political interest in denying it.
Well, we have to make everything political. That's
exactly
what we do.
Right.
We do it real good. Yeah,
yeah,
we should.
Well, yeah, there's a political interest and a lot of new industries being born out of it.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
Right. Yeah. So let me ask you, what do you think? One of the things that came out earlier in the week was they were looking at using radar above the canopies of the trees, and it still showed extreme drought. So, you know, as far as the forests are concerned, and I think about the redwoods and all of the forestry along the western coast. Is 1 year going to do anything?
Probably. One year is helpful, but no, right. one year. It would have to be a year of massive rain and frequent massive rainfall for 1 year to really restore the forest and other vegetation. So I think we're probably, assuming that we don't have any more dry winters for a while, it's probably going to take about 3 years for the state to return to normal in terms of water levels, in terms of the severity of drought. We'll see the severity diminish after this winter, I'm sure. But how much just depends on how much rain we get.
Spencer, let me ask you this. Australia went through a horrific drought, okay? Yeah. And theirs lasted, I think, a dozen years. And they made drastic changes, okay? So, you know, from everything from cutting back to almost zero to desalinization and things like that, they learned their lesson. Do you think we're going to get it here in the United States and California?
I hope we get it. I mean, we have such a, let me be politically correct, we have such an independent spirit here in the United States of America. We don't like conforming to any kinds of restrictions or guidelines. That's why we all drive cars and we still burn gas and we still use the English system of measure instead of the metric system.
Right.
And the rest of the world has
gotten
metric.
We're not going
to
give up, right?
So, no, it's hard to make Americans conform to any rigid standards. But when we start to suffer and feel the pain in our own homes and in our own families, then we start to, you know,
in California, it's interesting because, you know, more reservoirs would help, but people don't want to build more reservoirs. I mean, we passed the governor passed an $11 billion drought bond, and part of that, and the money's going to go to all kinds of things.
Yeah.
But what they're going to do, and they've said they're going to build a new reservoir somewhere, but what's more likely to happen is that they're going to take some reservoirs and dig them deeper. I mean, that's the problem in California. We don't have a place to store the water we need, which is why the snowpack is so important. You know, I mean, the truth is that we need more reservoirs, but, you know, there probably isn't the political or the public will to do that, which is why there has been more serious conversation about desalination. That is a very expensive process.
Sure.
And it's not going to be a cure-all, because you can't really, you know, desalinate that enough water to, you know, sustain people. It could, you know, help supplement. But, you know, those are the problems you have. You know, and you know, they're talking about doing everything from cleaning up water supplies. Apparently there are existing water supplies, especially in Southern California and especially in poor communities, where the water is undrinkable, and that's among the things that the state is doing. And there's some belief, and I'm not a big believer in this, but you've got city officials or state officials and water experts who believe that conservation, that we can conserve our way out of droughts, with the help of some rain, but that conservation will go a long way. Again, I see you shaking your head.
No, I'm just nodding. I'm acknowledging that conservation is one, one tool.
Right.
Yeah. But I obviously it takes more than just that to get us out of the drought. You know, I just want to get back to people's passion for weather here in the Bay Area for just a moment.
Right.
This is going to sound like a shameless plug for ABC7. It's not really. But so many people, we've been talking about El Nino and its effect on this season for so long, that literally everywhere I go, I mean, whether I'm in a restaurant, a grocery store, the men's room, wherever, people have been asking me about El Nino and what we can expect. So for all our weather department has devised a rating system for the storms. We call it the storm impact scale, because these storms do have impact. You know, we were talking about flooding and mudsliding earlier. So we've assigned a numerical value to every storm, 1 through 5, 1 being a light storm, and then we have a moderate storm, which is number 2, and then a strong storm, number 3, and we have a major storm, which is number 4, and a severe storm, which is number 5. We haven't gotten to the 4s and 5s yet, but we've had 1s and 2s, and we've had one storm that was ranked 3 so far. And
that's helpful.
It is helpful. Thank you, John. It's helpful because it helps people recognize what the impact of the coming storm might be. You know, will it be flooding? Will there be mudsliding? Is it expected to last, you know, 12 hours, or will it be 6 hours? Will it be accompanied by strong, damaging winds?
Right.
Might there be
down
power lines?
Right.
So we have the storm impact scale, which, and people who watch our newscast regularly are beginning to recognize that, this one's a 1, I don't have to worry too much. Oh, the next one's going to be a 3 or 4. There might be wind damage, might be power outages, and people are preparing.
Yes, and you've got a live blog, too, over there that you do once a month, which I think is fast. I mean, weather's interesting. You know, I mean, I'm the son
of a weather. Well, it sure is. I mean, you know, I got the message. Clean out the gutters and,
right.
And cut back the trees.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
You know, I got the email. Spencer Christian, thank you very much for joining us. ABC7 weather anchor Spencer Christian.
Thanks,
I do appreciate it. Happy New Year, sir.
Good to be with you guys.
And,
Happy New Year.
And thank you
Thanks
for coming in.
Okay.
All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, we will be talking to our dream Drexpert. That's right. Kelly Walden will be my guest coming up on the Drex Radio Show on KGOA 10. It's your sexy dream come true. That's right. You're listening to the Drex Radio Show live and local in the Bay and around the world at KGORadio.com. Thank you for joining me this Friday evening as we bring in the weekend. Thank you to Spencer Christian from Channel 7 for coming in and talking about El Nino. And it looks like the rain will continue, especially beginning about in San Francisco, 10 or 11 tonight through the early morning hours. And then maybe we'll have some sunshine tomorrow. That'd be a good thing. Okay. Let's say good evening to Kelly Walden. Hi, Kelly. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, Drex. It's so great to be back with you. I've missed you.
I will thank you. Yes, I've been in and out of recovery. I had a little bit of surgery, and it just won't stop. But I'm back. I'm back
in
the chair.
God, but you sound so great. You sound like you've never had a bad day in your life. So you're resilient.
Well, yesterday I had an aspiration, so I was levitating. So that's not the kind of dream you want to have.
Yeah. No. Yeah, what do you mean an aspiration?
Well, I don't think we want to get into that, but, you know, that's like removing the fluid from the wound, yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, for those who don't know, I want to thank Pat Thurston for sitting in. She continues to get a lot of airtime because I appreciate it very much, filling in on my show because, you know, I have this continual abdominal surgery recovery thing going on, and the aspiration was just fluid off the wound. So it's a good thing.
Wow, you recover fast. You bounce.
I hope so. Yeah. The quicker the better, I have to tell you. But thank you for joining me, Kelly Sullivan Walden. She is an author and she's a dream analyst. And her latest book is
the Love, Sex, and Relationship Dream Dictionary. Now, I'm going to tell you, everybody, this, if you're listening and you would like Kelly to analyze your dream or you have questions about your dreams, we're going to take calls, but we're going to have some conversation first. But if you want to queue up and get in line, because the lines always go crazy and people can't get through, 808-0810 is the number if you can hold for a while. So if there's something you've been dreaming about or you have a question about the dreams that you have, what they mean or how to manipulate those dreams, 808-0810 outside the Bay Area, 415-808-0810 is the number. All right. So, Kelly, let's start with, this is interesting. Just today I read a piece, and you can tell me whether this is true or not, of news that was in today's news. Whether you have nightmares or sex dreams depends on how you sleep. Is that true?
I think everything affects our dreams and affects the way we dream. Everything, every external thing will affect our dreams, but not necessarily in every instance. I mean, I think mostly what affects our dreams is the way we live our lives by day. I mean, certainly the feel of your sheets, if you're too hot or too cold, if there's too much noise in the room or not enough air or that kind of stuff. I mean, everything's going to affect your sleep and your dreams. But mostly, you know, it's like we should live our lives in such a way all day long as to think about the kind of dreams that we want to have by night. So the more balanced we are, the more we comfort ourselves, the more we get the icky stuff out of our mind. If we have a way of venting and journaling or moving the criticisms that pile up in our mind, we can be free and kind of have a good night's sleep. And the way we sleep at night, if we are not having good dreams, then consider the way you're dreaming and the way you're sleeping and think about changing it up a little bit.
Okay, so you mean lower the room temperature or change your bedding or something like that, or, you know, maybe move out of the room because the other person's snoring.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of tough. There's some people that are big dreamers that don't sleep with their wives or husbands. They have their own bedrooms because they really want to have their sleep time is gold. It's prime real estate. It's like nothing's going to mess with my sleep. I love my husband. I love my wife, but I'm not going to sleep with them. I'll maybe do whatever we do and then go sleep in my own room.
Right. Yes,
but
I think a lot of couples
do that. I'm not that serious. I think I sleep actually better with my husband. I have better dreams when I'm sleeping with him. Thank God. I think that would be a bummer to have to, you know, consider not sleeping with somebody because of the way that you dream when you're with them. Hopefully,
right,
you dream well with the person you're in love with.
Well, yes, and it's like a security person, you know, blanket kind of thing by you, and that is a beautiful thing. But let's talk about sexual dreams because obviously, I think everybody likes to have sexual dreams.
I think it's always a pleasant kind of a thing, and it's the thoughts that we think about it in the morning that I think are important. One of the things that I tell, I think more women than men, I think women have a little bit of the Madonna whore complex, like, oh my goodness, I don't know, there can be more shame around those dreams for some women, not all.
That's interesting.
And my perspective is our dreams, our sexual dreams, we really have a hall pass. Everything is, we're not bad people if we have sexual dreams. We're good. We should enjoy them. We should allow ourselves to revel in them and feel really good about ourselves and feel that we're healthy human beings that are blowing off some positive steam and that we're better for them. It's not a sign of us being, you know, kind of deviants if we're having a lot of those kind of dreams.
No, I never knew that. Yeah, I never knew that women actually felt that shame or that, you know, as you said,
maybe
that syndrome.
Just the Catholic women I know. I don't know.
Well, yes, there's always that. Yes.
The recovering Catholics out there like myself.
Yeah, remember, only the good die young.
Myself.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, but, you know, when we're having those kind of sexual dreams and when we're enjoying them, you know, why is it, and I think some people or maybe everyone has this, they want it to continue and,
right,
you know, try to manipulate it so it goes on. You know, and just my personal effect here is you know, it's happening, but you are almost conscious and you're right between that state of consciousness and being asleep. And it's like, okay, can I still keep going here?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And, well, on some level, I like to tell people that on a parallel plane, the dream does continue. the dream isn't just a dream. It's a reality unto itself. And sometimes if you're masterful enough, you can step back into a dream and pick it up. Or at least if you can't, there's an energy about it that you can carry into your waking life. It's like, wow, you can have this extra swagger the next day, like, I was good last night, or man, she was into me, or there's nothing wrong with carrying that energy, allowing it to linger. It's a really positive thing. If you feel frustrated and upset about yourself that you can't get back in the dream, well, that's counterproductive. But I think that it's a sign of being healthy to want to go back to what felt so good and pleasurable, even if you just go back into it, you know, just a slight bit. And even if you just go into the emotion of it, like having felt that good and connected and that delicious, I think it's a really positive thing to keep to carry with you.
That's fun. Yeah, because, you know, I think sometimes you have to get up and go to the bathroom or something, and it's like, oh, damn, well, this really screwed that up.
Right.
But if you wake up and you walk across the room and take care of what you need to do, and you keep it in your mind and immediately get back into bed and fall asleep again, you can continue, you know, part two.
And there's one, you know, here's like a little practical thing. The LED lights and some of those, the lights that are on our phone and on our digital clocks and things like that, those can really mess with the melatonin in our brain, and it can change the way we think and change the way we dream. So if you have to get up and go to the bathroom or do whatever, try to navigate with your eyes closed as much as possible. Try to not look at your phone. Try to not look at a clock if you can, because just looking at those numbers, there's something about the way the lighting is that it does kind of mess with the melatonin. So if you can sleepwalk as much as you can with your eyes closed without killing yourself, that's optimal.
Right.
And you're more apt to go back into that dream.
That's good stuff. All right. My guest is Kelly Sullivan Walden. Kelly Sullivan and Walden is, she's a dream expert, and her book is The Love, Sex, and Relationship Dream Dictionary. We'll continue our conversation, and we will. We'll start queuing up here calls if you want her to analyze your dreams. What do they mean? What do the nightmares mean? 808-0810 is the number. You're listening to the Trex Radio Show. Thank you, Soundgarden. We'll talk about worst dreams. Yes, we can talk about that with my guest, who is KellySullivanWalden.com is where you can find her. And she is a dream life coach training. Well, she trains and she talks and she analyzes dreams. So if you have any questions about your dreams, or you're having nightmares and you wonder what this means, or relationship dreams, anything about dreams, 808-0810 is the number. So, Kelly, let's talk about nightmares for a little bit.
Ooh, I love it.
Yeah, no one likes to have a nightmare, and I don't know how you avoid it, so right. I'll let you just take the floor here.
I some people call me the nightmare whisperer, because I don't love it when a nightmare happens to me, but I tend to find the gold in nightmares. And I try to teach people how to do that, and it's surprising how amazing they are. If we think about dreams from the perspective that they all come to us in the service of our health and healing, and even our nightmares have a blessing, have some gold to deliver to us, and we don't want to just forget about them and try to shove them under the rug. There's so much we can learn from them, and often they're pointing out where we're out of balance, where we've missed something, or letting us know that we're not prepared for something that's coming up and that we need to get prepared. So if we were wise, we would have that scary nightmare, we'd shake it off a little bit, we'd write about it, and we'd say, okay, what is this trying to teach me? What is it showing me? How is it trying to help me be better, more powerful, more prepared in my life, in my relationships? And often if we contemplate that, we will be surprised at the answers that come to us and the ways that we can become better people as a result of that.
Well, don't you think that nightmares are also caused by post-traumatic stress, or stress itself, anxiety, trauma, all of these things?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it's not just as a result of those things, but I think it's trying to help us move those things out. It's kind of like a laundry machine that gets stuck in a certain cycle, and its attempt is to try to help to get us to move that energy out so that we're free of it. If we have recurring nightmares and we resolve the issue that's being dreamed about, then those nightmares stop. And then our dream time can be used for other things, maybe more creative things, more productive things. So a recurring nightmare just means that something got stuck in a loop and you need to help to unclog whatever got stuck and shine some light on it, maybe redirect that dream. This is an area of specialty of mine. I tell people that a nightmare is an unfinished dream, and it's the job of the dreamer, because you're the director of the dream, to finish your dream, to direct it in your imagination or in written form in a journal in the way that you wish you could direct it. And once you do that in your mind or in your on your paper or in a drawing or however, often the dream will change, it will stop, and you'll be empowered as a result of it. And that's there's clinical studies that attest to this. It's not just me kind of blabbing here. This is a real thing. And it seems simple, but it's really powerful.
Okay, we're talking about dreams. And if you would like Kelly to analyze your dream, if you have a question about what does this dream mean that I keep having, or why can't I do this, or what's happening, 808-0810. Let's go to Desiree in San Francisco. You're on KGO. Good evening.
Thank you for taking my call, Drex. I'll be as quick as I can. My son has been in and out of SF General for the past 6 weeks due to methamphetamine and the psychosis that it brings upon. It makes you really crazy. And he was released yesterday, but the night before last, I had a dream that the morgue called me, and they said they had his body, and they described him, and they said they had just performed the autopsy. Now, I'm really in a weird panic now. I'm wondering if this is a premonition of something to come.
Oh, Desiree.
Because it was so real that I jumped out of bed, and I didn't know if I was awake or asleep.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And I just think that it's, I have a very bad aura around me now because I feel it's close. I mean, is there anything I can do to change, or was it just a bad dream, or is this something?
More often than not, Desiree, and I'm so sorry about the real life situation that you're going through, and I'm so sorry that there's that you're in the midst of this kind of unbelievable pain, and I wish I had a magic wand and could make it all better, but I can say this, more often than not, our dreams are symbolic, or our dreams, these kind of dreams are what I consider venting dreams. They're helping you to process through what might be a worst case scenario. So if it were to come to pass, you would be more prepared for how to handle it. But more often than not, these dreams are symbolic, or they're just helping you to vent out that energy so that it's not alive in you, so that you can be a clearer, cleaner energy to be able to cope with the stress that's going on. So every once in a while, you know, there are people that do have precognitive dreams, and you are given a sign ahead of time. But that's the exception to the rule. It's not the rule. So I would just say consider that it's a venting dream, and look for how is this dream helping you to move that scary traumatic energy out of you. And if that energy was flushed through, like all the way out, all that fear and trauma, then what might you replace that energy with so that you could be better able to cope with things? Like, might you replace that energy with peace, with calm, with a sense of security, a sense of all is okay, and trusting the process with your son? There's only so much you can do to change things or help things, but you can love him and be a presence that's peaceful for whatever it is he's going through.
Okay, thank you, and God bless you, Desiree. 808-0810 is the number to talk to Kelly Sullivan Walden. Any questions about your dreams, now is the time to call. 808-0810. We'll be back, and we'll continue with more of the Drex Radio Show right after we check in with John Libertini in the KGO News Center on KGO 810.